Hi, I'm Michelle, and I'm... Wait, am I the straight-laced psychotherapist?
I thought I was going to be the unconventional hypnotherapist, and you were going to be the super serious trauma specialist.
No, you were going to be the relationship expert. Like, love expert.
And you're going to be the specialist who guides people with down-to-earth techniques for transmuting trauma?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, good. I'll be the love expert. I mean, I am the love expert. I think we have this all sorted out. I'm Laura Richer, founder of Anchor Light Therapy Collective.
And I'm Michelle Mooney, a therapist at Anchor Light, and this is Holding Ground. Today and every Monday, we've got a little bit of everything for you. Shall we?
Yeah, let's do this. Hey, friends. Good morning. Welcome to Holding Ground. This is Laura Richer, founder of Anchor Light Therapy in Seattle, Washington. And as always, I am here with my co-host, Michelle Mooney. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Good morning to our listeners.
Michelle is our resident trauma therapist at Anchor Light. And we're here live on 1150 AM Talk Radio every Monday morning at 9 AM. And you can also catch us anywhere where there's podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, whatever you like to listen to. So today we're continuing our series on toxic relationships. And this is the second part of our series. If you missed part one, you can go to anchorlighttherapy.com and listen to that. But today we're going to be talking about toxic family stress in adulthood.
Yeah, we often talk about, and we did it on our last show, we talk about trauma and toxic family relationships in childhood. But, you know, there's a lot of dysfunction around family interactions when we're adults, too. So dysfunction and toxic family relationships as an adult can be as traumatizing as what happens as children. So a lot of adult listeners today might be nodding their heads right now.
Yeah, so this is really important to touch on because often the patterns of what we experienced in childhood that may not be the most healthy behaviors follow us into our adult lives. And so sometimes it's hard to have boundaries with family members. However, it's really important because if you continue to connect with these family members in adulthood in an unhealthy way, and even in some cases at all, it's not going to be what is best for you, and it's not going to support you in creating the life that you really want.
Right. Yeah. And as a reminder, not all families are perfect, right? But we wanted to take this episode to examine toxicity that can present for us as we interact with our families in adulthood. So, Laura, yes, let's jump into these types of toxic family relationships. And real quick, I found a really good quote in Health Line magazine. If you end up feeling bad about yourself after most encounters with a family member, there's probably a good reason for that and one worth looking into. So that's what we're doing today.
Yes. And so a lot of times we don't realize that things are toxic because they're normalized behaviors. This is how I've always interacted. This is the culture of my family or the belief system of my family. And I don't know that there's possibly another way to be, even if it's making me uncomfortable. So the first thing that can cause that is there is a huge emphasis on blood is blood, that families stick together at all cost, that we should do things just for the sake of our family, even if it's something that's not in line with our own values.
Right, right. Inauthentic experiences, right? So when we feel that, you know, in our hearts, right, in our minds, you know, that this is not good for us, but we still do it and show up to family events where we're like, oh, God, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, covering for people's behaviors that you don't agree with, or maybe giving people money when you don't really want to, or there's just, you know, because we take care of our family. But sometimes that, and sometimes we do want to do that, and it comes from a genuine place. But there's other times that you're doing it solely because you have this connection of family when it might not be aligned with what you believe in or what you want to do as an adult.
It can actually harm us and create a sense of unworthiness, a lot of conflict. And this belief creates a lot of unnecessary long-term angst, guilt, and disappointment for a lot of people. So blood is not always good.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, it's an unrealistic expectations, right, that we should feel closely bonded to every member of our family just because we share DNA. So, but number two is when values collide. And I think we're seeing so much of this right now with a pandemic, right? Opinions of, you know, people, you know, I'm going to wear a mask versus no, I don't think that's appropriate, right? Opening of restaurants, some families are like, okay, let's go to, you know, whoever's graduation or whatever. And, you know, you don't feel safe going, and that can create a lot of conflict. So, and we're learning a lot about how our family members might value health and, most importantly, each other. So,
that doesn't have to be deal breaker conflict. Mm-hmm. That could just be something that you discover that you don't aren't aligned in certain things. But for some people, it can. You know, if they feel that their children are in danger, or their health is in danger, or that there are just certain values that they don't align with, it can be difficult sometimes to continue to connect with people that you have very, very different opinions from. Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of value clashes right now over the social change, right? So there's the Black Lives Matter movement, and, you know, there can be some family members who might say things like, oh, well, all lives matter. So values around politics, it's election year, but also values around, like, how our kids should be raised. I mean, your parent or uncle might think you're doing a bad job just because, you know, this isn't what I did. Decisions of how to take care of aging, sick parents. You know, do we want to cremate versus burial? And a big one is, you know, who might get assets, or, you know, should we sell or keep the house when mom dies, and that sort of thing. So a lot of things can cause clash with, you know, what our value system might be.
Yes. And you do especially see that when people's parents pass away, that with siblings, that can come up very strong when people are fighting over what should be done and what we think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So some of these things, like I said, don't have to be toxic. These can be, some of them can just be difference of opinion, but you notice that it's toxic, like you said, if you feel bad in the interactions, if it's just you feel so opposed to how this other person is doing things that it causes you stress, it causes you to feel like,
bad about yourself, right? Like, oh gosh, they really put me down. And so, absolutely.
So the next one where you notice you might be part of a toxic family dynamic is if there's any verbal, physical, or emotional abuse. And abuse is one of the most straightforward things we can talk about in healthy family dynamics. But sometimes abuse can be tricky because we're not sure if that's what we're actually dealing with.
Yeah.
So maybe we're used to, you know, having certain senses of humor that might be considered aggressive or hurtful, but that's all, you know, just a joke. That's the culture of my family, to be very joking. So some other things that show up as abuse are obviously physical violence, but other things like commenting on your physical appearance, inappropriate touching or name calling, gaslighting, which is telling you that your experience is not valid, that what you believe to be true is not true.
We want to take a break?
Sure, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will be talking more about toxic family dynamics.
Do you make a positive difference in the world? Do you have a talent, philosophy, base of knowledge, product or service that you know could help a lot of people if only you could reach them? Join Alternative Talk 1150's family of broadcasters and start walking down a fruitful path. As host of your very own program, dial 425-653-1150 and find out just how affordable it can be to have a show on 1150 AM. That's 425-653-1150. Alternative Talk, we have an opportunity waiting just for you.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with a sun protection factor, or SPF, of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. UVA rays age the skin, UVB rays burn, and both cause cancer. But the perfect sunscreen doesn't count if you use it wrong. Don't need sunscreen on a cloudy day? Wrong. 80% of UV rays still get through the haze. Only use sunscreen at the beach? Nope. Anytime you're outside, UV rays attack the skin, so you need protection. And you have to reapply sunscreen every 2 hours. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Thanks for tuning into our brand new show, Holding Ground. You can find us here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. I'm Laura Richer, founder of Anchor Light Therapy Collective.
And I'm Michelle Mooney, the co-host of Folding Ground, a therapist at Anchor Light Therapy Collective. Our passion, our one big thing in life, above and beyond love, relationships, trauma, addiction, and healing, our specialty is helping others.
Every Monday morning at 9 a.m.
Find us online at anchorlighttherapy.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarus, and this is Climate Connections. When Europeans first arrived in North America, Atlantic puffins were common on islands in the Gulf of Maine. But hunters killed many of the birds for food or for feathers to adorn ladies' hats. By the 1800s, the population in Maine had plummeted.
Puffins were almost completely lost.
That's Don Lyons of the Audubon Seabird Institute. He says that about 50 years ago, conservationists started bringing puffin chicks from Canada and hand-raising them on the Maine islands. When those birds reached adulthood, they came back to the islands where they were raised and began nesting themselves. Now, the puffin colony in Maine has recovered to more than 1,000 nesting pairs, but global warming threatens to undo some of that progress.
The Gulf of Maine is actually now one of the most rapidly warming water bodies on the planet.
That's driving many fish to cooler waters, so the puffins are forced to fly farther or dive deeper to catch enough food.
The most intense warm years during the last decade have made it very difficult for puffins to raise chicks because of the additional work involved in finding food for them.
So reducing global warming can help Maine's beloved puffins survive. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Holding Ground. Today, I'm here with Laura, the founder of Anchor Light Therapy
Collective.
That is
me. Good morning,
Don't
Michelle.
Don't want to leave her out here. And Benny, our producer. How's it going over there? Great. Okay.
Doing well, yeah.
All right, great. So in segment one, we discussed the first three toxic family dynamics that we can have in adulthood that we still have to kind of manage and deal with, and then also decide maybe when it's better to set, you know, some boundaries or maybe take a break or, you know, disconnect overall. But so we talked about blood is blood at all costs, right? So that idea that, okay, we just should, because, you know, we should show up to things, we should continue to call our parents even though, you know, we had a really disruptive childhood, but we're related, so I just have to do that. We also talked about value clashes and verbal, physical, and emotional abuse.
And I think it's important to emphasize that there is no right or wrong answer. You get to choose how you want to interact with mm-hmm. your family, whether it's healthy or not. You know, a lot of times the whole blood is blood mentality. The problem is with that message is being reinforced because somebody in your family is asking you to not respect your own boundaries. And instead, the just because we're family, that should you should go above and beyond what you're actually willing to do.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, but at the same time, you can have boundaries with your family. You don't have to cut off all contact. In some cases, it is appropriate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So next is number four. You feel somehow controlled or trapped by your family members. So a good example of that is, you know, I gave you money in the past. I was there for you in a difficult time. And it can be used as leverage almost, like, don't forget all that I've done for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say there's a fallout in the family somewhere. And then, you know, someone's like, well, you know, don't forget all of these favors I did for you. Come back. You owe us in some sort of way. They might also imply or say outright that aligning with their expectations is a condition of their continued love and support. So I see this a lot, and we kind of talked about this in our previous episode. You know, you have to go to college, you have to have this major, you have to do these things that are expectations, and if you don't, then maybe love isn't given, maybe connection isn't given, support in some way. You're not invited to things anymore because you somehow, you know, mm-hmm. didn't meet our expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've worked with several clients over the years who have had some sort of this dynamic in play in their relationships. I'm thinking of someone that I worked with years ago who had a very complicated relationship with her mother. And ultimately, she decided that she wanted to interact with her mother, that it didn't feel right to her not to and her mother was constantly reminding her that she did a lot of favors for her, but that she had to have boundaries on those conversations. That, like, I realize that your expectation is that I would do this for you. However, I don't feel comfortable with that. And that actually shifted the relationship. So she was able to stay in that relationship and still maintain her own integrity.
Yep. And we'll talk a little bit more towards the end of the show about how to set those boundaries and how to know when it's appropriate and then how to, you know, what kind of what these boundaries might look like. So,
yeah. Yeah. But feeling trapped and feeling like you can't do what feels right for you because you're operating in a way that is lining up with what somebody else is what they want, but it goes against what you want. Yeah.
Right. And people can lose their identity in that somehow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Dad is telling me to go to school and become a doctor, but I really want to be a musician, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm being forced into this career or, you know, major in college or, you know, a sport in high school or something where, you know, it just doesn't feel authentic to you. You don't get to have the experience that really would have created meaning for you.
And this can be really detrimental to your mental health. And that's why we want to talk about this in the first place, is not to everybody's, you know, doing the best they can with the coping skills that they have. But I do see a lot of clients who come in and they've developed their careers based on what their families wanted for them and their careers that they were not suited for at all. Like, everyone in our family is a doctor. You're going to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. But they hate science. You know,
they hate science. They're, you know, better suited. They're
afraid
have a
of blood.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I don't want to be a brain surgeon. I really just want to paint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So number five is that, and this goes a little bit in line with what we just said, but you don't feel love, compassion, or respect. So if you are your true self, there is some sort of resistance to that. Mm-hmm. In a toxic family dynamic, you might feel contempt or disrespect when you are not lining up with the values of the family.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
So toxic family members could belittle your choices. So again, like in career, maybe I don't want to be a doctor. Maybe I want to do a profession that isn't considered as respected or desirable, and that causes problems. And so ultimately, this can chip away at your self-esteem and just leave you feeling bad about yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that you know, can lead to mental health struggles when you don't feel like you can be your true self within your family dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some other ones on that, right? A toxic family member might attack your vulnerable points. So a good example of that is, like, say maybe you are slightly overweight and then, you know, you're self-conscious of that and your parent might be like, no, you have to go to Weight Watchers. You have to do all these things to meet my expectations. I've actually seen clients like that where their parents force them into some sort of weight loss program. And that creates shame, right? If mom's sending me to Weight Watchers, I must not look good. I must not be okay. And, you know, even if the client feels okay on their own, right, they got some sort of feedback about their vulnerable points. Chipping away at your self-esteem, like you just said, Laura, disregarding your input or opinion. So kind of making decisions without consulting you, making big decisions, whether that's for the family in general, you know, some other things that just, you know, they're not valuing your input and opinion. It's just like my way or the highway. You can be seen less than because of your mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. So let's say that you are maybe on the autism spectrum. You might have some sort of, you know, overt depression, maybe some even more serious things like schizophrenia and that sort of thing. And your parents or other family members, you know, maybe extended family members are like, nope, too hard to deal with, or, you know, you're ill, so we kind of don't want to acknowledge you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. This one is really good. So when your business becomes everyone else's business, so let's say you tell your aunt something like, oh, I'm struggling in my marriage, or, you know, maybe I'm not doing super well in school, or maybe I have like a substance use problem, and then suddenly the whole neighborhood knows, right?
Yeah.
So not valuing your privacy, what you have going
on. Yes, a culture of gossiping or talking behind your back or not feeling safe to express yourself. Yes.
Yeah. Because that can close you off then, right? If I tell my mom or, you know, Aunt Linda or whoever the secret, yeah, she's just going to tell the rest of the family. And this is something I said in confidence, right?
Yeah.
So disingenuous apology. So you know, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry, okay, get over it, right? And when they apologize, then they continue that same behavior. But, you know, they kind of apologize, but right, words, mm-hmm. actions, very two different things. And then also critical remarks again, so showing a lack of empathy. So,
yes. So those are all examples of a toxic family dynamic. And if you mm-hmm. notice that you're experiencing those, it might be time to think about putting some boundaries in place yeah. or addressing some of those issues.
Right.
And sometimes, like I said, it's hard to know if something is healthy or normal, especially if it's normalized in your family dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
This checking is how in with it how is. You feel. Checking in with how you feel about it is mm-hmm. your first indicator of
yeah.
whether or not this is becoming a problem for you. There's a psychologist. Her website, I think, is theholisticpsychologist.com, Dr. Nicole Para. And she talks quite a bit about these types of family dynamics and the idea that blood is blood and that mm-hmm. overrides everything and how that actually can be very detrimental to our mental health and different tips of what you can do about it. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
that is a good resource to check out.
So the next one we have on our list, Laura, is you're the fixer, right? So people only come to you in crisis, right? Like, oh, you know, Laura, this thing is going on. My marriage is failing, or, you know, my job, there's some sort of issue, or I'm in financial distress. You know, I might need some money for you. I need, you know, consultation, that sort of thing. They show up out of the blue, maybe, right, you know, something like a phone call, a text or something in person. Maybe mom's knocking on the door, right? I need this thing right now from you. You know, you're kind of the only one in the family that's seen as, like, keeping it together. You're the strong one. Maybe you're the therapist or, you know, whatever the situation might be. You know, and that can be really draining for us. And what often happens is, you know, maybe you're struggling, right? So you're the fixer, you're the person who always keeps it together, but maybe you go through something hard and you show your emotions in some sort of way and that's suddenly like not okay and people are like, oh, I'm going to separate from you, right? Because now you're suddenly not the fixer right now. We don't know what to do with that because you're the one that keeps us together.
Right. And so sometimes people, that's how they connect within their family dynamic, is they connect in crisis. And everyone mm-hmm. takes on a role in the family. And so sometimes in dysfunctional family dynamics, there is that one person. And I've over the years seen many people who have struggled with this within their family dynamic. The one person that's always in crisis, the one person that always needs to be rescued or bailed out. Mm-hmm. And that is how they have built connection with each other. And so it feels like if I choose to not want to engage in this all the time where I'm always rescuing somebody, mm-hmm. that somehow I'm abandoning mm-hmm. my family. I'm thinking of one client I worked with years ago that had a sibling who was constantly, like, it was always something. And she felt so much guilt for not wanting to help the sibling. But she was trying to have a life. She was trying to work a pretty intense job and have a relationship. And so she has this sibling who's constantly in crisis, calling her in the middle of the night, needing things. Mm. And she felt it was hard for her to start to develop boundaries because she was fearful that something would happen. And at the same time, it was interesting is that as she developed more boundaries, the crisis – the sibling learned how to manage their own crisis mm-hmm. a little bit mm-hmm. more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was probably that sibling's way of getting their needs met and getting attention. But, you know, these were women in their 50s. So it's mm-hmm. like at some point, this is too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually in an Uber the other day mm-hmm. where and I actually had this Uber driver. It was like the third time that I had him in a week. It was super weird, but we like kind of almost have this, you know, friendship kind of going on. But anyway, he was driving and then suddenly his brother texted him and he's like, oh, God, anytime I see family members or my brother texting me, it's never good. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when he was like parked to let me out, he was like looking for a second and he's like, oh, yeah, he needs money. Right. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, okay, here it comes out of the blue and now I have to respond in some sort of way where, you know, he's just trying to do his job that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can still love your family members and your siblings and still not need to be their crisis manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people this all the time, and this is true for everyone, including us who are therapists, is you cannot be your family member's therapist. Mm-hmm. That you are emotionally invested in their well-being and that it's something that while you can be there for your family, it's natural that you would talk to your family members about problems and go to them when you're seeking support and comfort. But at the same time, if there is an ongoing issue that is a crisis management type issue, you're not going to be able to function as their therapist, whether you're a trained therapist or not.
Right, exactly. And it can even be more subtle things. So, you know, you're trying to commute to work or whatever. And I had a client a handful of years ago that her cousin was getting married, and it was constantly like, oh, I don't know what wedding dress to pick out. You know, what do you like, this one? Do you like that one? I don't know what flowers, and I need you to do all these things. And of course, you know, we want to kind of be there for our family members when they're, you know, getting ready to get married or maybe having a baby. But that, again, out of the blue stuff where you feel like, oh God, I have to respond, right? Oh, I like this wedding dress, or yeah, sure, we can do this for your bridal party, right? So it can just be those kind of like out of the blue, I need you, even though it might not be a crisis.
Yeah. And if it's something that you're wanting to do, that's great. But this is, we're talking about when it's becoming stressful, when it's throwing your life out of balance, when you feel like you can't say, hey, I don't really want to participate in this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's hard to create boundaries when it's things around like big events like that. But yeah, you know, we have to do that sometimes.
And I think everyone probably has that person in their family somewhere, or it could be a friend as well, that's just always having a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you're there, that can turn into enabling behavior too, that you're not allowing them the opportunity to resolve their own issue.
Yes.
So you're actually doing more harm than good.
Right. They're relying on you. So like somebody who's having a huge like relationship issue, right? Oh, we fought again and here's what's going on. And oh, we had this other fight. Da, 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 da. And it's constantly like, oh my gosh, you know, it's so draining. It's like, you know, at some point you need to figure this out on your own, because, you know, you just can't constantly have to respond to that.
Yeah. And you see it financially too, that somebody who's always being rescued financially doesn't learn how to manage their own finances. Mm-hmm. So it can be a loving gesture to have boundaries and say, no, I don't think we're going to step in this time. I have all the faith in the world that you can figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And if that, again, is a functional person, right? If, you know, if it's somebody who isn't able to manage their own finances or something like that, then it's kind of different. But again, you know, with mental illness, sometimes it can still be difficult to respond to those things, even if, you know, the person might not be super capable of doing those things on their own.
Yes, if somebody needs legitimate help, then that can be appropriate. But even then, there can be boundaries with what you do feel comfortable with and what is considered to be too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's so what do we have next here? So comparisons. So pitting siblings, cousins, grandkids, nieces, and nephews against one another. So if you – comparison is always negative. Really, I can't think of a positive time in personal relationships where comparing yourself to someone else is a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you do feel like how come you don't, your sister does it so much better, or your cousins have achieved this,
and your brother's so good at football and you want to be in drama club, you know, that sort of thing. Why can't you be more like, you know, whoever X, Y, and Z, right?
Yes.
Or, you know, why can't you find a good partner like so-and-so did, right? They're so happy and they have children and that sort of thing. Why can't you do that? You need to do that kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes, comparison, because we always feel bad with comparison. Mm-hmm. If we're comparing our relationship to somebody else's relationship, our achievement to somebody else's achievement, there's always going to be somebody better and always going to be somebody worse. And that's just an opportunity to feel negative about yourself or about another person.
Yeah, feeling unworthy, feeling like, oh, my parents can't love me if this is an issue. Or let's say you go to Thanksgiving and there's the shining star in the family and you're sitting next to them and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm just kind of in the shadows over here or something like that. So it can be very harmful to your mental health to be compared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that you can do about that is just ask for that behavior to stop. And again, it doesn't have to be a, well, I'm out of here. You've compared me to my sister and I'm never coming to Thanksgiving again.
Right.
But having boundaries, thinking about what is and isn't okay with you, and really focusing on that.
Right. The next one I think is pretty huge. So refusing to see you as you, and where a lot of this that I can see in, you know, my therapeutic practice, maybe in relationships and, you know, with friends and seeing their families, is gender identity or sexual identity. So if your parents don't agree with that sort of thing, like you were born a female, you know, obviously you're actually a male, right? You were born, you know, being a male, like you, that's just who you are, regardless of, you know, what maybe biological parts you have, but your parents can't maybe see that, honor that, right? Same thing, again, with sexual identity, you know, a lot of that can be around like homosexual relationships or, you know, bisexual relationships, pan relationships, all of that. If parents or aunts, uncles, grandparents say, you know, shame you in some way for who you actually are, that can really have an effect on you, right? I'm not accepted by the family. I'm constantly receiving sort of feedback that this isn't okay in some way. And you're not supported, right? Your identity is questioned over and over, and that's just so hard.
Yes, and creates a sense of having to hide or that you can't really be yourself, or mm-hmm. that there's something wrong with who mm-hmm. you are.
Mm-hmm. One that I also see a lot is, you know, a lot of people don't want to have children mm-hmm. or they don't want to be in a partnership, and they have that kind of pressure from family members that, oh, well, you need to get married, like, hurry up, you need to find some good man or woman who can mm-hmm. take care of you financially. And it's like, no, I want to do my own career. And no, I don't want to have children because my career is my child, right?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And then again, you can be shamed by family members for that sort of thing. So that's a huge one, right? You're not following these traditional ideals of what your path should be.
Right. And again, nobody should choose to have children because somebody else wants them to have them. Too big and too important of a job. So that's a decision that you want to make on your own. And some of these are decisions that we don't even make, like sexual identity and gender identity, that's just fundamental to who mm-hmm. you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And also, you know, having like a non-traditional career lifestyle in some way. So I have a client who cannot wait to buy a VW van and, you know, travel around the country. And that, you know, that's something that's kind of like, well, you know, you just need to get a job or something like that. Right. And, you know, so things like that aren't seen.
And parents might. I actually had a client who also wanted to have that same van life type of experience.
Yeah. It sounds exciting.
Yeah. And the parents weren't thrilled about it. They were wanting them to just get on with getting started with adult life and felt frustrated by that.
Right.
So I personally feel like that sounds like a really hard experience. But for those who want to do it, they should have that open road in their VW van experience.
Yeah, your kid wants to have adventure. Your kid wants to travel, and, you know, let them have that, right? Yeah. And, you know, if I wasn't working for you, I would do it.
Would you travel around in a van?
Actually, no.
No, me neither.
Probably a yacht? Maybe no.
No. If you're an adult, and so these are all examples too in adult relationships and adult family dynamics. Sometimes mm-hmm. when you are not an adult, it's appropriate for your parents to tell you you're not going to be doing this because you're going to mm-hmm. go to high school and you're not going to be traveling in a van. But mm-hmm. when you are a self-sufficient, financially independent adult, these are the choices that you can mm-hmm. make if these are the things that you would like to be doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I actually had a client several years ago that was sexually abused by a partner, and their family didn't really know. They knew something went on with that partner, but their family did not agree with the Me Too movement, and they mocked that a lot. And, you know, this particular individual, you know, just felt so unsupported, so unloved, because she had that experience of being sexually assaulted, you know, and Me Too for her, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, her family was mocking that. And, you know,
did she share that experience with her family?
She, not by the time that I was done working with her, she didn't. She indicated, you know, like something happened to her with a partner that she felt very violated. So in my opinion, I would probably put two and two together. But just even if that didn't happen to her, mocking something like that, if you feel very strongly, let's say, about the Me Too movement, right, and you're around family members that, you know, might be mocking that, might be joking about it, you know, oh, this is, you know, blown way out of proportion, that sort of thing, and it doesn't identify with your value and what you support, right, that can be very hard as well.
So what would you do with that in that situation? What was your recommendation for her?
You know, I really just worked around, like, she actually developed a substance use issue mm-hmm. around that. So we were working primarily on her addiction. I was working with her around advocating for herself, but she didn't feel safe because she was in this family dynamic where that was the opinion. And, you know, this is where these things can result from, right? Like, I can't speak up. I can't advocate for myself. I can't share with my family what happened to me. And that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But true that some places is not a safe place to share. And that might even be within mm-hmm. your family, and it's good to know and have those boundaries that hopefully there are other people in your life, your therapist or friends, that you can mm-hmm. share with. And then having boundaries, you know, people have different opinions, and maybe that's something that you just ask that we don't talk about that because we have varied opinions on that. Mm-hmm. So it's not, we don't need to go around telling everyone what they need to do or think or, you know, that try to push our opinions on other people. But at the same time, if it's something that you feel really uncomfortable with, that you can say, I'm not really open to having this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So, Laura, I'm kind of curious on this next one for you in a lot of the couples therapy that you do. Family members disapproving of your partner.
Yes. So that can be huge in families. And I recently worked with someone in individual therapy, but that his family was disapproving of his wife of 20 years.
Wow. That's a long time to kind of have that feedback, right, from your family that we don't approve of this partner.
We don't approve of them. And they were very critical of parenting, of the dynamic of the partners of my client and his wife. And so ultimately for him, what we worked on was how to have boundaries with his family and what that looked like for him. So I didn't want to say what my opinion was or what I would do in that situation.
We don't do that.
No, nope. I wanted to work with him to find out what was true for him. And what was true for him in that situation is that if his family wanted to exclude his wife from family events, that he was in the end not okay with participating in those things. So if they were going to ask him to choose between his wife and his parents, ultimately, that he was choosing his wife and his son. Mm-hmm. And it was sad because, you know, he loves his parents. He didn't want to have to let go of that relationship. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they were putting him in an impossible situation where he wasn't going to exclude his wife from his family. So
And that's really hard for her, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then thinking, you know, in that situation, they had a child, right? So what sense is this child making of it? Why don't my grandparents approve of my mom, right? Why can't I go to Thanksgiving with mom and dad? So I imagine that was very hard.
You know, and not to make in this example the parents the villains, because also they had a very different cultural background. They were from a different country. The wife was American. There was a lot of conflict in values because of culture. So they had a very strong belief system of what they felt was right in that situation as well. So that's a challenging situation to be in. There's definitely two sides to that story. At the same time, this person had to choose what was best for his life, and that's what he decided, because he didn't agree with the perspective of his family. He didn't believe that his wife was not a good parent, or that
she was bad in some way,
or that their relationship wasn't good, or that he was disrespected in the relationship. So all comes back to boundaries. It's all about, that's always where we're circling back to. So let's see, what else in couples therapy for people who have partners that haven't, you know, a lot of times I will say this though, just speaking to the other side of things, sometimes families have very valid reasons why they're disapproving of somebody's partner, and because and that they're seeing things that maybe the partner can't see. So you, if it comes from a genuine place of caring, you can again take that feedback and look at it and say, you know, is there something here for me to look at? Is there some sort of dysfunction in my relationship that I am not taking seriously? Or maybe is it just their opinion and it's none of their business?
I mean, and I think that's an important thing to note. You know, family toxicity can be from both sides. So for those parents, it was very, you know, in this, you know, fake example, essentially, you know, if the parents are really disapproving of the partner because let's say that, you know, husband or whomever comes to Thanksgiving or whatever it is, constantly intoxicated, and they get maybe violent and, you know, start arguments or whatever, that's very toxic for the rest of the family. So it's not necessarily just maybe the client that we're working with. It's, it's how it extends to the rest of the family. So
All right, well, should we take another little break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how you can detach and what you can do to move forward when you find that you're experiencing toxic family dynamics.
Great.
You are listening to Holding Ground.
Right now, Doctors Without Borders medical teams are operating in some of the most remote and dangerous corners of the world. When front yards become front lines, when disaster erupts, when disease rages, when communities collapse under crisis, at the crossroads of conflict and epidemic, where there are no hospitals, that's where we operate. We go where conditions are the worst, because that's where we're needed most. In nearly 70 countries, we're saving lives threatened by violence. disease, malnutrition, and catastrophic events. Donors are vital to our mission. Your response is critical to our response in places where a few others will go. That's where we operate. Learn more at doctorswithoutborders.org.
Alternative Talk 1150 is your sports organization's safe bet when it comes to airing your team's games. Our players are all seasoned professionals when it comes to sports programming. Imagine your games being heard on local radio. Your team deserves the MVP treatment. Call 425-653-1150 today to learn how affordable and fun it is to broadcast your games on the radio. Call 425-653-1150 and make your next season something special. That's 425-653-1150.
Thanks for tuning into our brand new show, Holding Ground. You can find us here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. I'm Laura Richer, founder of Anchor Light Therapy Collective.
And I'm Michelle Mooney, the co-host of Holding Ground, a therapist at Anchor Light Therapy Collective. Our passion, our one big thing in life, above and beyond love, relationships, trauma, addiction, and healing, our specialty is helping others.
Every Monday morning at 9 a.m.
Find us online at anchorlighttherapy.com.
Miss a show on KKNW? Check out 1150kknw.com for podcasts of many of our programs. That's 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to Holding Ground. I'm Laura Richer, founder of Anchor Light Therapy in Seattle, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Michelle Mooney, and she's our resident trauma therapist at Anchor Light. Today, we're discussing toxic family dynamics we may all be struggling with in adulthood. So, Michelle, can you remind our listeners where they can find us on social media?
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. So both our show and our practice have their own accounts. YouTube, you can find us there, our right. show. And maybe, I don't think we said this yet, but maybe we're live and we're going to, this is actually a video recording of the show. So yeah, we don't always do that, but here we are.
You can see what we look like on YouTube. Yes. And I also want to say for anyone who is struggling with any kind of toxic relationship and they feel like they would like a little support in developing healthy boundaries or identifying and moving through some of these issues, that you can go to acrelighttherapy.com and schedule your complimentary 20-minute consultation where you can set up a time to talk to either me or Michelle and see how we might be able to help support you.
Yeah, we would love to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are going to continue talking about toxic family dynamics and what the impact of that is. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about this just to judge our family members and throw them under the bus. There is a real impact that can happen when you're involved in a negative relationship with your family as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of mental health symptoms that can come out of this. So let's say you have a lot of anxiety, panic, fear, dread. It can lead to panic disorders, the need to maybe self-medicate. So let's say, okay, I'm going to Christmas or, you know, whatever it is, a Hanukkah celebration. And, oh, I just have to get drunk before I can even deal with this, right? You know, these things can develop through these toxic relationships. And this is when we, you know it's time for therapy, perhaps. And, you know, again, learning how to set these boundaries, coping with what are maybe our mental health symptoms that are coming out of this.
Right. And a lot of these mental health symptoms come out because we feel like we can't say no to what mm-hmm. we don't want. So back to what we said at the beginning of the show, that blood is blood, that I've just got to tolerate this behavior because this is how it's always been. Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm told that this is my role in mm-hmm. the family and this is, you know, I'm stuck in this. And so when we feel like we're stuck, then we start to develop symptoms, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, anxiety, fear, dread, mm-hmm. the need to self-medicate.
Yeah.
For people who have had particularly traumatic backgrounds, sometimes in those cases, it may be appropriate to disengage altogether because the trauma was so severe that they are constantly re-traumatizing themselves mm-hmm. by being in environments where their abusers were there. So whether there was sexual abuse present or physical abuse present that mm-hmm. or emotional. That be continuing to interact is going to always trigger those mental health symptoms.
Yep.
And it's very unfortunate when that happens, but sometimes clients ultimately do determine that they are not able to continue to interact mm-hmm. with people who are abusive mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah. And then it can be hard too. Well, you know, I can't be around dad because of X, Y, and Z, or, you know, aunt, whoever. And then, but I still want to have a relationship with mom, and, you know, mom and dad kind of come as a pair. So how do I navigate that situation? So it can be very hard. And again, you know, when it gets to this point where maybe we're having mood instability, PTSD, you know, it might be time to detach in some sort of way. So, and when we have to do that, Oprah Magazine, great resource. We talk about Oprah sometimes on here. She says,
love Oprah.
Love her. Hey, we would love for you to come on our show.
Yeah.
we know we're not, you know, you're not busy or anything. But she says, you know, when we have to do this, it's a figurative death, right? So when, and it can come along with complex grief because the family member is still living, but it's emotionally unsafe to be around them. So we talked last week, or last week or the week before, when we did the grief episode, right? Grief can come from anything. So, yeah, having to grieve somebody who's still alive, but we had to set that boundary, and grieving that relationship, because there can be good things, right? But ultimately, we have to decide, like, no, this just, it's too much. I can't do this in some sort of way. So
that's what makes it really challenging, I think, in any toxic relationship, is if it was purely negative, then it would be easy to detach from it because it's purely negative. But there's, even if there's just a sprinkle of a few good things in there, sometimes we really want to hold on to that, and that and that is what triggers that grief, that you know, and it makes it a difficult decision to be able to move forward.
So some ways, next we have a list of how to start practicing detachment. So not participating in a messy situation. So let's say, again, you know, Aunt Sarah always comes to Thanksgiving dinner and she's always drunk, right? Okay, I just can't participate in this. Like, maybe even if we still go to that event, okay, I just have to sit in a separate room or across the table from her.
This one also really applies to that always in crisis family member, is maybe you don't participate in all of those crises. Maybe you don't go into every breakup and every financial disaster with this person. You might choose not to take that phone call or not be available, or just let them know that I'm not available for this crisis. My crisis line is now closed.
The next one is deciding what you share and what you keep quiet. So again, when we feel like things aren't going to be safe to share, if we, you know, feel in some sort of way, oh, this is going to be shared with other family members who aren't safe or might have an opinion around this that doesn't quite align with mine. So deciding, like, oh, I can only share X, Y, and Z with mom or dad because I have to protect that in some sort of way. And that can even be direct, right? So I don't want to share with my parents because they might not agree.
And that can be particularly challenging for people who grew up in family environments where we tell each other everything.
Yeah.
And when you're a child, that might be very appropriate. You know, there's some safety issues maybe to set, like, parents will say, like, you need to tell us everything if there's any reason why you're unsafe. But sometimes that becomes detrimental when you're an adult, because it really impairs your ability to make your own decisions if you're constantly seeking feedback from everybody in your family. So this may not even come from a malicious place, but it can become a toxic behavior. And so you may not need to get your parents' approval on everything when you're 50, that it's okay for you to tap into your own inner wisdom and make your own decisions about things in your life.
And kind of related is avoiding topics that bring up strong emotions or circular arguments. So let's say we're never going to agree on something. So maybe, like, taking that conversation off the table, right? We're not going to just, I love you, I want to be around you, but we can't just keep going round and round about this one thing.
So politics is a great example of this. People who have opposing political views are not going to be on the same page. You might as well not have the conversation and just say that we can connect in so many other ways, and this is not one. Or even a past event or house, you know, a lot of times there's lots of variations of what happened in the past. And I might have a different, you know, experience than you. Maybe my sibling feels that they had a very traumatic childhood and I feel like we had a good childhood. And maybe I don't want to talk about our bad childhood because that's not my perception. And so I can say, you know, I value that that's your experience, but this isn't a topic I want to keep going round and round about.
So again, kind of related to these, keeping the conversation light and casual, ending the conversation or leaving it when you have to, deciding beforehand what topics you want to avoid. So again, the same kind of thing, right? Politics, we're not going to talk about. So brainstorming ways to kind of change the subject, which, you know, kind of puts pressure on you, right? Like, oh, I have to think of all these ways that I can kind of redirect the conversation. But once you get good at that and you can, you know, that can be a way of kind of just, okay, moving on, maybe shutting down the thing that we don't want to talk about.
I've heard a lot, a good example of this, I've heard a lot of clients say over the years, is in families where the parents are divorced, where maybe one parent wants to constantly talk negatively about mm-hmm. the other parent. And, mm-hmm. and as the child, even the adult child, you just don't want to engage in that or listen mm-hmm. to it. And so just finding ways to move away from that subject or just having a boundary. Like, this is, you know, again, that is your experience and I can appreciate that. But at the same time, that's not my experience and I don't really want to have this conversation. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
For the next 50 years. Because yeah, sometimes I think that's what it feels like
we're
to people.
Be
we're stuck in
a
the
relationship.
Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's a huge one where, you know, one sibling or, you know, maybe one parent, they don't think that it was a toxic situation growing up. They don't, mm-hmm. maybe they don't know there was sexual abuse for their sister or something like that. And she has a really hard time engaging with the family. And maybe the sibling doesn't understand that. So different perspectives of how we grow up can be a huge one that we don't necessarily agree on.
Yeah, I think if you're going to talk to any group of siblings, each one is going to report to you a different childhood because we're different people with different personalities and different experiences. And so that's fine. We're all going to have different perceptions. But at the same time, that might be not that's maybe not something that you want to have a ongoing conversation mm-hmm. about.
So, again, letting them know when you don't want to discuss certain topics and then deciding when you respond. So,
And then when people won't respect your boundaries, that's when you might start making decisions about whether or not it's even appropriate to continue to engage in some of these things or relationships anymore. But a lot of work can be done by just implementing boundaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times when people realize what your yes and no is, mm-hmm. they start to respect that. Sometimes they just don't even know.
I think that's a good point, right? When we can set these boundaries and if family members don't respect those, right? Well, okay, you set this, but I'm still going to push this, right? Mm-hmm. That's when maybe things are, you know, we might have to detach a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So next we're going to talk about how to find help and just move on from this in a lot of ways. So Laura, what's something we can do?
So there's a little quote here. How much space do I need to love you? And that just applies to what we said. Do I need a lot of space or maybe it's just a little space, a little boundary we put into place? So there's a lot of things that we can do to learn how to create healthy family dynamics. One is just learning about there are certain patterns that are very common in family systems that can be damaging that we're not even aware of. And no one is intentionally trying. There's no overt abuse or anything like that. That it's so just becoming educated about what's healthier boundaries might be, especially if you're noticing that there is an overt abuse, but at the same time, there's something that you're not comfortable with.
Yeah, again, getting in touch with yourself. Okay, how do I feel putting myself in this situation? Oh, I'm really dreading this. So, you know, thinking about those things and, having that self-insight into, you know, what you're willing to put up with.
And a big part of therapy is education. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we do with our clients is psychoeducation, where we've gone to school to study all the research that we can report back to you of what works in relationships and what doesn't. And there are some small changes that you can make. And therapy can help you identify some of those things.
Schedule your consultation.
Yeah.
So fortunately, there's another excellent solution that can kind of counteract the disconnection that we have with our biological families, and that is cultivating our chosen family. Mm-hmm. So chosen family are the people you deliberately invite into your life. So best friends, other relationships with other people that you can use as a mentor, or guidance, someone that's there to support you, and they're beloved people in your life with whom you share deep trust, loyalty, mutual commitment, and they're also people that are probably going to have similar values to you and are able to guide and support your evolution to the person you were meant to be.
Yes, chosen family, especially if you're biological family just are not your kind of people. A lot of people can still create family systems in their lives that are very supportive and loving and serve the purpose of family. So that just because you weren't born into a family that had that to offer doesn't mean you can't create that in your life very intentionally.
So I think with chosen family, there's a really cool thing that happened last year in New York, and also in other places like Chicago, San Francisco, actually Minnesota, St. Paul, they began to allow workers to use paid time off to care for anyone they personally define as family. So, Laura, if you're my best friend and you're kind of my mentor and I look to you as a mother or something like that, if I, you know, if you got sick, right, I'm allowed to go to, you know, take some time off to care for you, right? It doesn't have to be a blood relative.
That's very cool. I wonder what caused them to make that change.
I think reality. I think a lot of places acknowledge now, right, that maybe we have family that isn't necessarily blood tied. So I think that's super cool. And that was from Psychology Today.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to keep this conversation going. Next week, we're going to be talking more about toxic romantic relationships. Yes. And so you'll want to come and listen to us next Monday at 9 a.m. on KKNW. Yes. Thanks for listening today. Have a great Monday morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Holding Ground. You can find us here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. I'm Laura Richer, owner of Anchor Light Therapy Collective.
And I'm Michelle Mooney, a therapist at Anchor Light Therapy Collective. Find us online at anchorlighttherapy.com.
We'll see you next week.